program. You know, I can remember when kids used to like to have stories read to them. They'd actually beg their parents, like their fathers, to read these stories.
Aw, Dad, you always start talking about that when I want to watch my
program.
It was
a very big deal, too. The fathers would read these exciting stories and sometimes adventure stories to them.
This is my favorite program, Dad.
And the kids would brag to their friends about how their fathers would read these
Dad. The other guys get to watch their programs.
Kids used to like their parents.
A father reads his son a bedtime story about young Oblio, who was banished from the fantastical kingdom of pointed heads and things for having no points. Yes, that is an actual plot to a film that we watched today. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Extras and Epilogues. The theater is open. My name is Shannon Young. I'm going to be your host tonight, as always, and tonight is going to be a little bit different. With me, of course, we have my co-host, Mr. Hunter Hendricks.
I was sitting here thinking about tipping my hat, realizing I don't have a hat and they can't see me, so it doesn't matter.
Nope, they can't tell that you don't have a pointy head.
I do. It's kind of, yeah, that's true.
Lindsay Wolfgang is here with us again this week.
I don't have a pointy head. I have a flat spot on the back of my head, but that's a different story. And I have brought a friend along today. One of my good friends from college, Miss Haley Bricker, is with us, and she is the one who introduced me to the point. So this whole episode is her fault.
Got her the golf clap for that.
Look, one of the things.
This is one of my favorite childhood movies. I must introduce all my friends to this at some point.
One of the things Shannon and I have talked about since we started the show, which was last July, it was definitely last summer.
Yeah.
Was that it was kind of half of a happy accident that like it has introduced, I think, the both of us to a bunch of things we would not have watched otherwise. So
yes.
No matter how much I do or don't like something at the end of it, I appreciate that it has taken me outside of my comfort zone.
Because
otherwise I would watch the same six movies over and over, and you can see them right behind me.
Ladies and gentlemen, so, in the industry, we call that foreshadowing. This is a weird thing to start off here real quick. I've also known Haley for quite a while. The weird thing about that, though, is that anytime I've ever been around Haley and talked to Haley, it's always been with Lindsay in Pennsylvania. So I've always been very quiet usually, and I let them talk, do all that. This is a whole new world, Haley, because I never shut up when I'm in my comfort zone. So I apologize ahead of time for however I come across. And that's not just to you, that's to the listeners too. I apologize, as I do every week, for my personality. I want to send out a very quick top of the morning to you out there, even though you're hearing this in April. We're actually recording this on St. Patrick's Day, which is today. It's my day, and Jesse and Tanner and every goddamn person that says they're Irish. And until I get the test back, I could still claim it. So
13%.
Hunter, what I've got here is a bottle of Tullamore.
Oh.
It's Irish whiskey. Irish whiskey, which I was going to have a nice glass of this while we record the show. Now, the problem is I can't get the label off. So we're going
to
hold off on that.
To open it, you mean?
To open. I can't even open the damn thing.
Is it wax sealed? Is that what it is?
No, I think I'm just weak as a kitten. Ow. That hurt my fingernails,
too.
Probably
because you haven't drank enough of the whiskey yet.
I'm trying to get to it.
You gotta drink more.
You can't drink it because you can't open it.
I need a knife is what I need. Anyway, so tonight we're talking about The Point.
Now, I have a knife. Do you need a knife?
Go ahead and bring me that knife real quick, if you don't mind. And I'll introduce the movie while Lindsay does that. It's a quick trip downstairs. So this movie released February 2nd, 1971 on the ABC Network. Directed by Fred Wolf Hunter, who will go later on to direct episodes of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and James Bond Jr. Do you remember James Bond Jr.?
Yeah, I do. So we talked about that briefly during, I think, the next to the last episode that we have done so far of arguably entertaining. When me and Cody talked about when Cody and I talked about James Bond and Indiana Jones. When I say TMNT, by the way, I only abbreviated it so it wouldn't take up multiple lines.
You talk about the 80s version?
Directed episodes, yes, very first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon, and then I think he was the main guy behind directing episodes of James Bond Jr. A show that I do remember, but I did admit at that time I have not watched. I am only aware it is not particularly good, but I don't think that's his fault. I think that's the fault of anyone who thought that making James Bond a kid and making a show out of it was going to be a good idea.
I disagree with you.
I don't think I've ever seen that one.
I know you disagree with me.
I was a big fan of James Bond Jr. as a kid, and I still remember as a kid driving around with my mother and my uncle trying to find a toy for James Bond Jr. And I never found one. I could never find a James Bond Jr. toy. So listeners, Zane Laney, especially if you're listening, if you find a James Bond Jr., send it my way. You know the address. You know where to send it. Haley, sometimes fans send us toys.
But it's changed now. It's now 7-Eleven Broadway.
Oh yeah, yeah. 7-Eleven Broadway. I'm gonna pour myself a glass of this Irish whiskey. I am not gonna partake as I often do sometimes because I've been told I get a little silly. So let's stop on that real quick. Starring the great Ringo Starr / Dustin Hoffman / Alan Thicke. This part confused me. Lindsay asked me, would you rather watch The Point with Alan Thicke or Ringo Starr? And I forgot we were watching this movie early. So when she said, do you want to watch The Point with Alan Thicke or Ringo Starr? I felt like crusty. I was like, what the hell are you talking about? And she informed me. Now, Haley, can you explain why there are three different actors as the narrator in the film? Like, there's three different versions of this?
Or four.
Four.
There's actually four the most different important versions three. Of this. Every time they did it airing on TV, they had another actor come in and record the voice of the father / narrator. And they're all just people that were friends with Harry Nielsen. He just had like one of his buddies come in, and like Ringo Starr was just one of his buddies.
We have so, a similar
The Alan Thicke one was actually the one that I grew up with because I had it recorded off TV from the 80s was the version that I watched a lot growing up.
That's also the one that I chose.
I was reading. Part of it is because originally Dustin Hoffman did the first one and he wanted a lot of money for it. So when they re-showed it the next times, they redid that role so they didn't have to pay him.
Ringo Starr, if I read correctly, also did the made for video version, the one that didn't always air on TV. So that was the one they recorded and disseminated. If you were to get it, it was that way.
Unless I misread that. Also have the DVD version. The DVD version is Ringo Starr.
And then there's
I also watched the Alan Thicke version. That was the one that Lindsay sent me.
It's the best version. It's the best version.
And I've never heard the Dustin Hoffman version anywhere. I know there is one, but I don't. Other than if somebody had it recorded off TV, I don't know if there's any existing.
Which, with it being in 71, would have been kind of rough.
And he was the one who wanted the large payday, if I remember correctly. Well, so that's probably why that one's harder to find.
There's also the extremely rare, I saw this when I was looking through notes, there's the extremely rare beta version with John Wayne that does the narration for the film. And it's horrible.
You should have read further.
It's horrible.
John Wayne Gacy.
That's why they destroyed that version of the film. Yeah, they destroyed that version of the film.
That's why you can't find it anymore. Yeah.
Runtime of 74 minutes, which is shorter than the sweet spot. Not quite hitting the sweet spot.
Right, but it's importantly, and this is the next bit too.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also a made-for-TV movie. So,
right.
You know, one of the last big animated movies we watched was a Goofy movie for this, and it was just under that too. Well, not made for TV, but like Lindsay said, animations, especially at this time, going to run a little shorter. And not just a made for TV movie, but the first animated film made for television.
That so I did some, not know.
Yeah, has some. Well, to be fair, I got it from IMDb, so I might be wrong. I don't know.
I mean, time frame wise,
Yeah, I would think so too. I'm sure that wasn't happening all that often prior to this.
Budget versus box office.
It was one of the first animated movie to air on primetime TV.
Narrowly beating out Fritz the Cat. Anyway.
Another one I haven't watched.
And you probably shouldn't. And I don't recommend anyone else do either. Budget versus box office, no one knows. It was a made-for-TV film. I assume it did well, though, because it is very legendary. So, I assume it did well. It did well with critics. 89% audience approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Not enough critical reviews to get a something, but...
percentage. Yeah, there were like four... And I didn't go picking through them, so it didn't give an overall percentage. But yeah, I could not find anywhere where it said how much this cost. The number for Dustin Hoffman was like 20,000. So add that to whatever it cost to animate and get everything else, you know, right, secured and all that. And there you go.
Well, this was made in the 70s. Let's get into the film itself. This is made in the 70s. It's an animated film from the 70s. And I think it's important to note, and I don't know if you put this in the notes here. Let me see. No, I don't think you put in the notes that apparently this was an LSD trip that this person had.
I did.
Is it in there?
Yeah, look at the third bullet. I didn't use LSD.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That. Yeah,
that's
so,
what he said in the quote.
Gotcha. Nilsson explained his inspiration for the film in typical 70s fashion. I was on acid and I looked at the trees and I realized they all came to points and the little branches came to points and the houses came to point. I thought, oh, everything has a point, and if it doesn't, there's still a point to it. It's important to say that because that. All right.
That explains a lot with this film.
Yeah. Harry Nilsson, by the way, it was an album. So there was an album that he created, and then the animated film came afterwards. So it's basically just a visualization of the story that goes along with the. That's where all the songs in the movie come from. But
even
I feel like
album,
we should say that.
The album itself actually has a little comic in with it. I have the CD version of the album in it. So even that, and it has, the album itself actually has narration in between each song and does tell the whole story. I mean, they added a bit more for the animated one, but it's mostly based off the album.
So okay. We've reviewed a lot of films for this show, a lot of them. And we're talking about all over the place, everything from, you know, extreme weird Japanese horror and Tokyo Gore Police to While You Were Sleeping to Goofy Movie. I mean, we've run the gambit on this, and I myself am a big lover of film. I'm a huge movie buff. I'm a cinemaphile or a cinephile. You got to be careful with the words you put on that. And I can honestly say without hyperbole, this was the weirdest movie I've ever watched in my life. And the worst part about it is I have not slept well in the past few days. And so every so often for a few seconds, I would kick out and kick back in. And I didn't know if I was dreaming or if this film actually existed. Respectfully to the people on the show that love the film, and we don't dog movies on here. That's not what we do. We are,
it's dog soldiers.
Unless it's dog soldiers. And yeah. This is a hard film to talk about and review, especially for me and Hunter and potentially Lindsay. I don't want to speak for anybody because I didn't grow up with this. I didn't know this existed until today. I knew we were doing this movie, but I didn't know what it was. I knew nothing about it until today. I went into this completely blind, and it's such a strange film. I don't know how to talk about this movie because I feel like this was an hour and 14 minutes. It could have been a 30-minute film if they cut out the entire part of him going into the pointless forest and meeting these creatures who make the point that not everything is pointless, just to get the message across that you should not exclude people who are different. That's a 3-minute ending on the end of any cartoon of the 90s. That is a 30-minute episode of Family Matters. This was an hour 14 minutes.
You animated, you go with G.I. Joe, and knowing is half the battle.
This movie is a trip. Some of the visuals are wild. The plot is at times nonsensical.
Do you recall your reaction to the whale?
Yes, I remember the whale decomposed, and I was like, Jesus Christ. this is for kids.
Really there is a song with a decomposing whale in it.
Yeah.
And I always forget the name of it and just call it the decomposing whale song.
That's probably what it is on the soundtrack if you look it up.
Yeah.
I
gotta go change the name real quick.
A decomposing whale.
You guys are at that. No, the decomposing whale song.
When we started the film and Lindsay said, do you want to, let's get this over with and then you can play games or something. I was like, God, don't be so judgmental that I'm going to absolutely hate something just because I don't know what it is.
And I was expecting you to say, what the hell did you just make me watch when it was all said and done?
No, I was saving that for this show. What the hell did you make me watch? this was not my kind of film, Hunter.
Song is Think About Your Troubles.
My troubles never come in the form of a decomposing whale.
I was going to save a lot of this for my review, and so I will. You said a lot of the same things that I would say to some degree. I told you before we got here that this was – I usually don't have to go to this length, but I put my phone in the other room because I knew if I didn't, I would be tempted to look at it. Because, again, I'm in the same boat of I didn't grow up with this. It's ostensibly a children's film, right? It's made with the intent to teach a lesson, and it's animated. Not that you know, in and of itself means it has to be for children, but so yeah. I mean, I kindly said 15 minutes. Shannon goes, it was five, and I'm like, you're right. It was 5 minutes in. I knew exactly where the entirety of the plot was going, and the question was, will the songs, will the characters, will the animation keep me hooked? And admittedly, it was a struggle. But I'm also 39 years old, and I had never seen this before, so. I think we landed on the same thing of how do you review this? How do you rate this? Because there's a big difference between the objective viewpoint of it and the subjective. Where did I fall on the spectrum of it? And how do I think about it versus it's a film that exists. How will other people view it? How should it be, you know, put into that?
Hunter, I had a thought on this.
I don't want to get into that right now. Yeah, go for it.
I had a thought on this. I'm not going to get to my review yet either. And I actually want to turn it over to Haley and Lindsay and let them talk about this film because they're way more versed in it than we are. But before I turn it over to them, and I don't want it to come – I want to say this now. I don't want it to come across that I hated this movie. I didn't hate this movie. It wasn't for me, but I didn't hate it. This is a term I know Hunter knows very well, and I know it very well. In the realm of entertainment and comedy, there is some people, what you call the comedian's comedian. He's the guy or she is the girl that modern audiences, like the regular audience, doesn't get. They don't laugh at too much because this comedian makes other comedians crack up. He entertains the entertainer, and it's a very niche thing. And to me, that's what this film feels like, is this is an animation lover's film. This is someone that, you know, who loves and respects the art and respects the medium. This is something that maybe they grew up with or they're seeing now. And they can pick out so many things about it that I can't because I'm not that person. So in the same way that, you know, in certain films, especially when it comes to horror, I'm well versed in horror movies. I can talk to you about horror films. I think this movie is really meant for people like Lindsay and people like Haley, who are incredibly intelligent when it comes to animation. And I am now going to turn it over to Lindsay first and see what she thinks about it. And then we'll go to Haley. And while we do that, I will drink because I feel like I've made myself perfectly redundant.
Well, yes, I was going to reverse that and let Haley go first since she is the person that introduced me to it. So if you,
hey, you're in charge.
Yes.
You first saw this at all, Haley, if you would share that with us and like just your initial experience with it and what made you want to show it to me and the other girls at college.
Sure. I mean, I grew up watching a ton of animation. It was always something I was really into even before I even understood how animation was really made. But a lot of things that I watched around the time I was watching this were the things everyone else was watching. I watched a lot of Disney, I watched a lot of Warner Brothers, all the Saturday morning cartoons, and My Little Pony, and all that stuff. And this was my first experience with anything this weird. I had never seen anything like this weird and experimental up to this point, and it just fascinated me as a kid. I didn't really understand it totally when it got into the really weird, crazy visuals that sometimes had absolutely nothing to do with the story, but it just fascinated me. I just remember just sitting and watching this movie. I was only like 6 or 7 years old the first time I saw it, just watching it over and over again. But then it's like growing up later, talking to other people, like everybody can talk about, oh, when I saw The Little Mermaid or something, but nobody I knew had ever seen The Point. So I always have to show it to my friends at some point, especially people that are really into animation. And I usually introduce it as, okay, just so you know, this is really weird. You always have to intro it like, I don't know if you're going to like this or not. It's very weird, but I just need to show this to you.
And I can confirm, it's very weird.
For our listeners that don't know, I went to school for animation. I met Haley at college. We were in the same classes, all that sort of stuff. became good friends very quickly. And there was just one weekend at school that she's like, okay, I want you guys to watch this. And so one weekend that we were all staying on campus, we sat down and watched this oddball film that at first glance, like, if you think Yellow Submarine, that's a very similar concept as far as like art style, and just it's from the 70s. It's like the SNL skit where they're like 1980, except it's 1970s.
It was the 80s. So, hey, real quick, not to interrupt you, Lindsay, but between the two of you, is this a specific type of, because I don't know, I'll say it, I don't know shit about animation.
It's just
the only
classic
thing I know.
Hand-drawn animation.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask, because yeah. The first thing that comes to mind is, you know, when Cuphead came out a few years ago and was a big deal, mm-hmm. that was rubber hose style animation.
That was
so
rubber
I looked
hose.
Into that and figured out what that was. I didn't know about this. The comparison I kept making was, if you've seen the Tootsie Pop commercials,
yes.
It's the owl. It's like that, kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah.
It's like, it kind of looks like that. Done by the same animation company.
Perfect. Yeah. All right. So I was yeah, on, yeah. I was right
so
on
it
something.
It's very much a style of that. This one, it's watercolor too, which is odd. Like
yes.
the backgrounds, a lot of times they're just a couple streaks of
watercolor, like,
and that's the
yeah.
whole background.
Yeah.
It's very
yeah.
abstract.
It's very minimalistic, but if you also pay attention to the credits, it was really only animated by like three or four people. So
okay.
you almost
it
have
obviously
to keep it
done kind of low budget, but they did what they could with
yeah,
because
all the budget went to Dustin Hoffman.
And Alan Thicke was right there and better. I'm sorry.
Right. The whole time.
I'll take Alan Thicke a million times over Dustin Hoffman. Lindsay didn't even give me the Dustin Hoffman option. It was Alan Thicke or Ringo Starr.
Not there. Sorry.
To,
I mean,
we have to pay.
I gave you options. I found
Dustin
good
Hoffman
copies
every time.
Of both. So, but I remember first watching this, being like, okay, this is really weird, but at the same time, I am intrigued. I really like the idea behind the story. Once it gets going, and it's just that fun play on words of like. It's pointless, but it has a point. Like, everything has a point. But the whole point of the story is that everyone's taking it as the literal as opposed to the abstract. And, yeah. It's
yeah.
just... I'll admit, she first showed it to us. I'm like, okay, this is a little weird. The soundtrack got in my head. I get Me and My Arrow stuck in my head more often than I will like to admit. but
yeah,
every now and then I'll be at work and I'll just be like, da-da-da-da-da.
The music is one of the things that definitely made it stick with me. I think if it would have just been that animation, I probably would have liked it as a kid, but not stuck on
through.
It so much as an adult. I still listen to that soundtrack all the time. I listen,
yeah.
I watch a movie maybe once every couple of years, but I have songs from it a lot of times just playing. It's just
yep.
very chill kind of music for what a weird film it is.
Prior to rewatching today, I can definitely say in the last couple of years, I've probably watched this film at least two other times since my initial viewing of it. It's always been one of those, oh, they have this on here when I'm like flipping through streaming services. And I'll be like, you know what? I'm going to throw this on in the background. So like it caught my attention enough that I've put it back on multiple times of my own free will. So, and I suggested it for this. So.
I have never had this come across my path. For the record, I thought this film was trolling me at first because it's called The Point, and the point of the film is that everything has a point. And when this movie started about 30-40 minutes into it, I thought, okay, well, I've got the perfect joke for tonight when the show starts. It's ironic to watch a movie called The Point that is pointless. And then I thought, but wait, it has a point. Am I the idiot? There were times I sat there thinking, like, am I stupid? Like, am I not? this movie made me question my own intelligence. I thought, because it's easy to dismiss it and go, well, this is just a really strange film, and if it doesn't have any substance, this movie has no substance to me. It has a message, but that message is wrapped up in like 50-60 minutes of pointless. I'm gonna go out and talk to these creatures, and it just felt unimportant to the main part of the story, which is that you shouldn't exclude people. But by the end of it, Hunter, I was sitting there. Mm-hmm. With the calculations in front of me, like in the meme pictures, going, am I stupid?
Does it? So, did you know that this was sort of built around an album first? Did
no,
you know that before you watched
it? I found that out today.
You went in blind.
As a kid, I didn't
know
that. I realized it
right.
when I got older, but I had no idea who Harry Nielsen was as a kid.
And me either. I worked in radio for over a decade, and I've never heard the guy's name. So, I knew only because I did the notes. So going into it, I can tell, oh, this is basically, it's not necessarily a promotional product for it, but it is very much built around the album came first and then this happened. Shannon, what I really want to know, because I think you're the prime candidate for this.
Sure.
Does it help or hurt now knowing that it was built around an existing album of songs? Does that make a difference to you in any way?
So one of my favorite artists, bands, is Coheed and Cambria. Jesse would agree with me on that. And sure. Coheed yeah. and Cambria, all but one of their albums are based around a story that the lead singer, Claudio Sanchez, writes. And going into those albums and knowing that, it makes the lyrics a little bit more sensical because you realize it's part of a bigger story.
Yeah. Really, they basically did what we thought about in college of having a comic book that has a soundtrack.
Yes, pretty much.
It is pretty much what Armory Wars is.
Amory. Jesse does the same
Amory.
Thing. I'm going to slap him. He should know better. This is the opposite of that. This is the album that has a movie about it instead of a comic that has an album about it. Knowing that changes absolutely nothing. I said all this for nothing. No, it changes nothing. I still don't understand what I watched. But I did enjoy certain parts of it. I thought the animation was really charming. Exceptionally charming.
You commented on Arrow a lot.
Yes, I loved Arrow. Arrow was my favorite part. There were parts in that film where they would show Arrow and he would smile and smirk. And every time I'd look at Lindsay, I'd go, that fucking dog. Like,
look at that dog's face.
You're just me with Ayn from Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah.
I've never watched 10 seconds of Cowboy Bebop that didn't have Ayn in them because every time they gets brought up, I go, wait, who's that little corgi again? And somebody goes, Ayn. And I go, yeah, fucking love that dog.
I like that dog.
Can't tell you shit about the rest of it, but I love that dog.
I didn't like, and maybe I need to go back and watch some parts again. I didn't, there's something about the way in the beginning how everybody was okay with this kid getting exiled.
They're just like, okay, well, that's how it goes. All right, well, too bad. All right, here's some candy, kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, they seem pretty chill about it, including the parents. And they're like, oh, we're really going to miss him, but yeah, let's send our small kid off to the woods by himself.
Law, what you got to do, I guess.
Law's the law, you know? and the count, I think in the film, Hunter, the count said that there would be a bloodbath if he wasn't elected count again.
Well, he said it. If he doesn't win that election, there may not be another.
There may not
one.
Be another election.
So
they're so nonchalant about sending him out, and there's not a great idea of the passage of time when he's actually out in the forest of the Pointless. From what I could gather, it was exactly like 7 hours, and then he came back to the kingdom, and everybody was like, he's back!
He slept at one point, so...
It was because he didn't have any food. This is a little kid who hasn't been fed... And is wandering in the woods for like 3 or 4 hours. Kids are going to pass out on rocks and dirt. It happens all the time. And the kid comes back.
And that rocks and dirt are going to talk to him.
Oh, my God. The giant rock guy. Oh, Lord. That
freaks me out just a little bit.
That was the part where I sat there. That was the worst part of the film for me. Because at that point, I'm like, I don't understand what this is. What is happening? Why is this important? Like, why
wasn't with the start of The Pointless Man where you're like, what the hell is this?
I still don't know what the fuck that thing is. That is still, I must have slept through a part where he gave a 10-minute exposition about who he was and why he was there. Because I'm still wondering that. Haley, throw me a bone here.
It kind of goes by like Alice in Wonderland logic. Like, kid goes to a weird magical place and meets a bunch of weird nonsense creatures and learns lessons, mm-hmm. kind of thing. And like the pointed man, pointless man, whatever he is kind of the Cheshire Cat. Like, shows up, says some weird stuff, disappears. Shows up again, says some more weird stuff, disappears.
Gaslights Oblio a little bit and.
But the
pointed man always amused me. Like, he's just so random.
It's the idea of the point and pointless and stuff like that. That's where you really, this is really more intelligent and deeper than I think you think it is going into this kids film, because you have to start thinking about the idea of, okay, the point of this movie is that the kid didn't have a point on his head, and everyone talking about the point is this very specific thing. This is why they ostracize him, is because he doesn't look like them. The point is, it's not symbolic, it's actual. It's the point on his head. Because he doesn't have this, they're exiling him. But then all of the people that he meets, he realized that everyone has a point. They're not pointless, but it's a completely different meaning to why he was kicked out in the first place. They weren't out there because they didn't have points on their head. It's because they had no substance to the rest of existence, I guess. Like, they had no value, but not because of the point. And that's when I was not drunk enough to comprehend. I'm still not, as I'm talking about it.
There's some depth to this movie. That's what I think is interesting about it. I mean, it's pretty deep for...
It really is. Yeah. I'm confused. Go ahead, Hunter.
With what? What do you want me to say? You said that like I've been sitting here. You look like you have something to say. I'm just nodding and agreeing, man.
I need to find, from the trivia, I need to find this stage musical that has Davy Jones and Mickey Dolenz in it.
Man, good luck. It's hard enough to find good versions of existing.
That would be amazing.
I can only assume.
I didn't know that was a thing, and I need to see it. Or at a minimal hear it.
Well, okay, I just found something on the guide to musical theater, but this was from one of the Wikipedia entries on it. So it had a couple of them, which was kind of strange. So from Wiki, it says in the mid-1970s, Esquire, whoa, what a name, Esquire Joachim. The man's name is Esquire. I thought it was a title. Artistic director of the Boston Repertory Theater adapted and directed a stage musical version that starred 18-year-old David Morse as Oblio. The production later toured to the Trinity Repertory Company in Providence. In 91, Nielsen gave Joachim permission to remount his adaptation of it at the Chapel Court Theater in Hollywood. Here's the one that I was... So in 1977, a stage adaptation was presented at the Mermaid Theater in London. Featured in the cast were Davy Jones and Mickey Dolenz, both former members of the Monkees and longtime friends of Nielsen. So again, he had famous friends to work with there.
And they were acquainted with the Beatles as well, so possibly through Ringo, you know?
Also...
To make it a full-length musical, by the way, they had to include other songs. So it wasn't just the ones that were on the Point album. They had to include other songs from Nielsen. And they did release an original cast album through United Kingdom and MCA for that. Or in the United Kingdom by MCA.
So I'm looking into it. Cool, you said David Morse, and I'm like, no way. And I looked it up.
David Morse.
David Morse. It's the same guy I was thinking of. So David Morse. Hunter, do you remember I sent you not too long ago, it was an episode of Tales from the Crypt about the gunslinger that finds himself kind of in limbo. David Morse was in that. And I was like, that can't be the same guy. It absolutely is. The same guy from that. That's and awesome. The Good Son and 12 Monkeys and The Long Kiss Goodnight and The Negotiator. This it says it right here. If in 1975, Joachim, by then the artistic director of the Boston Repertory Theater, adapted and directed a stage musical version of The Point that starred Morris as Oblio. That is amazing. Yep. What a small world that he played that character. Yep. That's incredible.
I'm trying to know. Why is it not working? I'm dropping the. Well, I guess I'm not.
Point.
The text does not like me dropping stuff into it tonight for whatever reason. But anyway. I can pull it up again, anyway, this is just the guide to musical theater on it. It doesn't really say anything different other than having a poster from the Mermaid Theater version of it. But there it goes. Now it's popping up.
Another rabbit hole to go wander down later.
Yeah, and again, apparently there is a original cast recording of it somewhere. It said it was released on CD in 2016, I think.
Oh, I love the.
It's like an anniversary
artwork.
Version.
That's awesome.
I was gonna say it's pulled straight from the animated special, like from the. Yeah, I keep calling it that.
I somehow both can and can't see this adapted to live action. It's like a theater show. I just can't really picture it because it's so out there.
I'm pretty sure it's going to go in.
That makes sense. Davy Jones was Oblio and Mickey Dolenz was the Count's kid. Yep. Mm-hmm. Nope. That tracks completely.
When
I can see both of them doing that.
I think this particular one. When you got your ticket, you then had to snort cocaine before you went into the theater just so you could kind of understand what the hell was going on.
It was 77. That was at least 3 or 4 years away. It was probably still LSD.
It was LSD.
They just keep it to the original. Keep it to the original.
It was laudanum.
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 Is the word you're groping
laudanum.
For.
Laudanum.
Laudanum.
Well, if there's no laws, then there's no lawyers, and it just goes from there.
I can't tell if that's a quote from the movie or not because
it is.
God, it really. Oh my God.
It's okay. He caught on to one that it took me a second where he's like, well, let him eat cake. Well, that didn't work before.
And I said, I got that reference. And she's like, what? And I explained it. She's like, oh, yeah. Yeah.
I look forward to the time, by the way, that we have a party here at the house and you decide that you've had too much to go home.
Then I'm going
to
do laudanum.
You curl up in our guest bed and I'm going to put this on TV at about 3 o'clock in the morning in your room and just let you wake up to it and see what happens.
I have a hard enough time.
Watch what happens next.
I have a hard enough time. Haley, when I go to sleep, I put on ghost videos and I go to bed to ghost videos. And sometimes I will wake up about an hour later and the ghost videos, there's something screaming or there's someone talking to me and I'm looking around going, holy shit, what is happening? And I have to calm myself down. Okay,
I didn't realize he was sleeping on the couch the other morning and I wake up and out in the living room, I just hear the, I hear you, you don't belong here. And I'm just like, what the hell?
She thought I was talking to somebody in the house. That would also be scary to wake up to. All right. Let's get to our review of The Point. Okay.
Yes.
So here on Extras and Epilogues, we do a 5-point system where it's 2 thumbs up means you love the film. 1 thumb up means you liked it. 1 up, 1 down means you're neutral. 1 down, you don't like it. 2 down, you hated it. Famously, only one film has gotten all 2 thumbs downs across the board. No, 2 films.
Two.
And for those of
Dog
you...
Dog Soldiers.
And Faithful Findings by Neil Breen.
Yeah, by Neil Breen.
So, in comparison of this to a Neil Breen film, which one would I rather watch? That's a hard one, because this movie was both intelligent and well animated and charming, but it lacked but it lacked Neil Breen. So
that's correct. So as most films do.
Oh, he'd be the next narrator. They bring it back and have Neil Breen narrating.
No, he'd have to play Oblio.
Well, we had this discussion. Neil Breen would never adapt someone else's work.
No, it has to be his own work.
True, right.
Because again, we wanted him to do the Alexander Forging of a Warrior President movie, but he'll never take on another project. He's like Vince McMahon. If he gets something else under his thumb, he's just going to ruin it.
Yes.
Haley, if you don't sign an NDA, Neil Breen, we need to educate you after this.
Don't, Haley, run. All right, so
you have a rare opportunity here.
I will go first, as I often do, and I'm going to start with the statement that I made earlier, and I'm going to bring it back. How do you review this film? Because plot-wise, it had one somewhere. You had to look for it. Some parts were more obvious than others. This movie was not for me. I'm not famously not an animation person. I don't love the medium as much as Lindsay does, and Haley, obviously. I respect it, and that keeps me from just going, this is stupid, I didn't like it, because it's not stupid, and I didn't not like it, but I also didn't like it. It to me, this is a good candidate for 1 up, 1 down, in the sense that I see the value in it. It's like Halo. I don't like Halo, but I see why people like Halo, and I see why it's important, and just because it's not for me doesn't take away from its importance. Now that's different from a movie like Dog Soldiers, where I had an affinity for Dog Soldiers, and in rewatching it, I realized all of the problems and all the things I grew to hate about it, and that's why it was 2 thumbs down for me, because it was a huge disappointment, and objectively, it was just a bad film. Once you take nostalgia out of it, it's just a bad film. This film has something going for it, is that I don't have nostalgia for this film. So like Hunter with, you know, Tokyo Gore Police, which, you know, he didn't like, but still only gave 1 thumb down to, because he saw that there was value in the film. I'm on the same level with this. This obviously wasn't my favorite movie, but it was an interesting movie. And although I probably will never watch this again, unless Lindsay really wants to and can bribe me with, I don't know, meth at this point.
Is that a bribe?
I'm not going to bribe you with drugs.
I'll probably never see this again. Do I regret watching it? No. There's hardly any films that I ever regret watching. I didn't even regret watching Neil Breen. I'm looking forward to watching the next Neil Breen.
Yes.
I'm a sick man. A sick
live
man.
Live in person. The first live Extras and Epilogues we've talked about.
Yeah, we're Mystery Science theatering it. So,
yes.
So with this film, I am going to give it 1 up, 1 down. Because I think it is a valuable film. I see why people like it. This is the comedian's comedian to me. I respect it. Parts of it I enjoyed, parts of it I was very confused about, and parts of it I didn't like. But there was enough up and down for me that it's going to go straight in the middle. What about you, Hunter?
You guessed it. I told you that I wasn't going to tell you mine in advance, though I had long since decided on it from the moment that we finished it, and I was in the same position. I was one up, one down. And again, if I could be completely subjective, it's not for me. It's not for me. I didn't grow up with it. My wife will tell you, and I assume my parents will tell you too, I haven't asked them about this since. I have some kind of weird, whatever the opposite of affinity is, aversion, I guess, to older animation like this. Like it sets something off in the back of my teeth. And so this was a little bit of a struggle for me watching this too. Something about it, I don't know if something happened when I was a kid and I got scared while watching something like this or what it is, but it is famously difficult for me to watch older stuff like this in that way, because the longer I say famously among my inner circle here. So in that sense, it was difficult for me to deal with. Again, also within 5 minutes, I knew what was going to happen. I knew exactly where this was going to go. Because I knew it was essentially animated around an album, I knew kind of what I was getting into. Here's the songs, and we're just doing things to go along with that. But like Shannon said, it has a value. It has a purpose. I was also very critical of the Super Mario Brothers movie and other kids' movies of modern times for being kind of
soulless.
Now I get to do it. Pointless.
Yeah.
They don't really accomplish anything. Here's a bunch of nostalgic things or a bunch of things you like to look at, but there's no real plot and it accomplishes nothing. There's more theme and story to this, to the point, than there is to any of those things. There's something to be learned. I've said before, I think kids deserve a better class of entertainment. Not just this is fun to look at, but also it has some inherent value. It teaches something, and hopefully you take something away from it. That's what this was for me. So that is, aside from the fact that it does have really interesting animation, even if it's like, again, does something to me personally. Objectively, I can't say it's bad. And so from a personal standpoint, that's where the down comes from. I don't think it's something that I would just go throwing recommendations around for or anything like that. I think had I grown up with it, it'd be a different story. Finding it at 39 is totally different. And so I have to go right down the middle. But it's a definition, Shannon, that you used of one up, one down in a previous episode. It's a neutral one. It's not, I think this is a middling movie and that it's only so good.
Right.
It's tough for me to have an opinion on it because from one perspective, I can see where its value is for other people. From another, it can't hold that for me because I'm past that time frame. So I'm going to do the exact same, and I'm going to stop repeating you now and move on to something else.
This is why I take the first one, because I get to sound smart first. Yes. And sometimes Hunter agrees with me and just has to go, yeah, you said it. We actually, it's funny you mentioned that, Hunter. We actually have audio footage of you as a kid,
audio footage,
the first time that your parents put on an old animated film for you.
I'm going to do it while you do it.
All right, go ahead. You got the clip? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right.
No, you hit it.
There it is.
I was trying to sync it up. I couldn't do it. I knew exactly what you were going to do. I just couldn't.
Sounded
just like that too.
It did. You had a very high pitched voice growing up as a kid.
Yeah, until it dropped, it was.
You're right. I want to hit on something you just said though, because I think you made a great point about something, and then I'm gonna go to Lindsay. I think kids do deserve a better class of like film, because in the past 10-15 years, especially with the popularity of 3D animation, in my opinion. Every 3D animated film that I've seen, for the most part, has been extremely samey in the way they feel, in the emotions they elicit. And if it has any little bit of a fun-loving character, you can almost guarantee that in the trailer or the end credits, he'll dance. All of the characters will dance. Sometimes they floss, and every time they do, I die a little bit inside. So to go back to an era when animated films like had meaning and tried different things and were experimental, I might give it an extra thumb up just on Hunter's point, because he convinced me on that. Like this is the kind of film that, even though maybe it's not for me, goddamn, at least it's different. At least it's original, and I will give it all the credit in the world for that.
Again, the irony to me is at least it has something to say. For something right. that spends a lot of his time talking about how things don't have points, and then eventually comes around to the lesson that they do. It has something to say other than you remember this thing you played in a video game.
Hey, do you like here that it fire is on flower? A screen.
You
yeah.
Here's it. Here it is on a screen you can't control. Enjoy it for 3 seconds. I
feel like he's taking a shot at us, Lindsay, with the Murloc in Warcraft.
I don't care. I love that Murloc.
I love that Murloc too.
I will take that three seconds of that Murloc.
And I don't think that you shouldn't. Yeah. I just think if you were
plus
five,
he's talking about Mario. He's not talking about Warcraft. He's talking about Mario.
Yeah, and if you were five and if you were my kid, I would go, let's watch something let's watch some educational something.
Your kid would ask you while Oblio is a flossing.
They had the cartridge and says you got to just blow in that.
Yeah, which ruins them. You should never be blowing into cartridges. I don't care how much you think it's fixing it. It makes it worse.
The acid from your saliva damages the pins in the game.
Something has never made it better.
All right.
Okay,
Ellen,
to me.
I'm sorry, hold on for a minute. I've got it. If you unlock a memory, I've got to bring it up. Lindsay, do you remember we worked with somebody at Stephen Barry's? She was talking about a specific sex act with someone she was with. She told him to just spit in it. Do you remember that? Yeah, you do, because I see your face.
Why did you bring that back
because
up?
Because I'm like two glasses into this whiskey. All right, Lindsay, go ahead.
Anyways, back to the film.
Yes.
I am giving it one thumb up. I enjoy it. I enjoy showing it to other people, as Haley shared it with me originally. I like the soundtrack to it. I have Me and My Arrow in my favorites list, and it pops up on the regular here and there. I enjoy the film. And honestly, in this day and age, with all the hate and everything going around, I wish people could take a little bit more of an example from it. Like, especially at the end of the film, how accepting everybody in their town is of Oblio. Like, it would be nice if our society would be a little bit more like that.
I wish everyone in our society would at one point together turn to Donald Trump and go, oh, you're the problem. I get it. And then chase him out of town. Then I wish they would take the points from their heads and stab them with it. But only hypothetically, for anyone listening, I don't wish any harm on the man. Haley.
But yeah.
What did you think of the film?
I'm still a little torn between, for pure nostalgia reason, and just how important this movie was to me as a child, I would give it 2 thumbs up. But then if I'm thinking, if I had just seen it for the first time now, I would have still really liked it, because that's the thing. Going back to it, I always really enjoy it again. I think I'm going to go with 1 thumb up, because I mean, I definitely see it does have problems, and I can definitely see why it's not for everyone. There's a lot of movies that I saw as a kid that fall into 2 categories. They're either like, this is so great, I want everyone to see this, or ones that, oh, this doesn't hold up at all. And this one's kind of an in-between. It's definitely a 70s thing. It doesn't hold up to how animation is now, but I just still appreciate the strangeness of it. Still really like the music, and I still think it does have a good plot overall, for as simple as it is. So I'm definitely going to give it 1 thumb up, almost 2 thumbs up for nostalgia, but I think if I'm being realistic, probably 1 thumb up.
That's what we do here. We try to be objective here, you know? We try to be very objective here.
Because I was trying to think that as I was watching it, like, okay, if this was the first time I was ever seeing this movie, would I still like it? And I think I still would, but I think I did appreciate it a bit more as a kid than I do now.
Which makes sense. Yeah, because when you're a kid, I mean, it's animation and it's funny story. As an adult, you can kind of look at the points that they're making, there's that word again, and enjoy it on a whole different level. So this is the most unique film that I've ever seen. For extras and epilogues, by far, easily. I mean, it really is. Yeah.
I know we've referenced them a couple of times tonight, but like, when you consider that we've also watched Neil Breen's Fateful Findings and Tokyo Gore Police, that is saying something. It has nothing to do with good or bad. It's just unique. It's just different.
Right.
And again, sometimes I'll settle for different, man. Yeah. Sometimes I'll be satisfied with different, even if I don't come out the other end going, wow, that was great, I want to watch it again.
It's unique.
You can't say it's like anything else other than those, you know, very minor comparisons of animation styles and that kind of stuff.
I truly believe that's a great 3 list right there that you had there. Tokyo Gore Police, Fateful Findings, and this as probably the 3 most different experimental films that we've reviewed on the show. Turns out experimental doesn't always equal we love it. In fact, it never has. But one day, and I think Neil Breen's Cade, The Tortured Crossing, is going to be the one to bring us
that
back.
Goddamn tiger. It's oh, my God.
Send that to Haley. You love animation? Send that to Haley.
Yeah.
This was animated.
It's painful. It's painful.
It's extremely painful. So, okay. So, Hunter, I said on the last show that we're introducing a new segment called, what was it? Best character, worst character? Is that what we settled on?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, I wish I hadn't done that before this one filmed, because...
I mean, look, I forgot
you guys did that on the last one.
We haven't made this reference in a while, but we do own the network. You don't have to do shit. Like,
no, I'm going to do it. Best character in the film award clearly goes to Arrow. That's just the best character. I just loved Arrow. Arrow was great for me. That was a good dog. Worst character goes to all of the rest. It's a joint effort. No, it's
the Count.
No, it's the Count's son. Because the Count, at least, he's the bad guy. He's the bad guy. You're supposed to dislike him. But the Count's son is just
a whiny little shit.
Yeah. Screw that kid. He irritated the hell out of me. He is that, again, that's the message, though. He's that bully on the playground that tells, you know, a group of white kids are playing something, and the black kid comes in and he says, "You can't play because you're different." That's him. And you knock him on his ass. Well, no, you don't. You get in trouble at school. Tell your parents. And then your parents can knock him on his ass. I really don't know where I'm going with this.
I get in trouble.
Now is the part that we do called epilogues, where we talk about what happens to the characters after the film, and sometimes we talk about what a potential sequel would look like. I'll go first. I assume that at some point, Oblio finds a spaceship. He takes the spaceship into outer space, where he goes to a planet filled with creatures who have giant holes in their face. And the point of the story is that just because there's a hole inside of you doesn't mean that you're not a whole person. He meets some characters along the way. One of them is a giant stick with long flowing hair, and he's in a rock band, and he sings them a song about togetherness. And I have no clue where to take this film.
You got really close to turning this into that animated movie, Sticks and Stones. We were gonna write.
Yeah.
You were heading down that path. I thought that's where you were gonna go. I'm like, stop giving shit away for free.
I didn't want to
veer too far. We haven't really trademarked that yet.
The only thing I want to do with that.
So is this Stick Twiggy Stardust?
Where's the boo button? Why do we not have a boo button on the soundboard yet?
We needed it for Tanner last night. We need it for this tonight.
I got this.
I'm Lenny.
That doesn't really do it.
Pretty good. That's fun, though. It's a good time.
That's all I got, man. I don't know where you take a film like this. I don't know where the characters go, because all of them literally lost physical parts of their body at the end of the film for no reason. Parts of their heads caved in on themselves. Buildings shifted as if God himself touched them. I don't know. I can't say.
I can't say.
So, Hunter, help. Help, please. Help.
So I've been sitting here, I did this a couple weeks ago and I did it again tonight. I forgot that was part of the show. I forgot half the show. So I had about 3 minutes to figure this out. And here's what I got in 3 minutes.
Okay.
Because I was going to take the duration you did. And it was like, okay, they've mostly been kind of triangle-like and kind of cone-like, and now they're circles. So maybe there's like squares, right? They're square people. And then it's Huey Lewis in the News and it's hip to be square, but that's not it. That's not it. The real, I wanted actually, you did the sequel. Sometimes we do this thing where one does a sequel, one kind of does an epilogue. I'm going to do the real epilogue.
Okay.
The real epilogue is that the acid trip ends. And everything gets very plain, right? It turns out Dad is just real depressed because his shitty kid watches TV all the time and doesn't listen to his stories. He probably doesn't have a great job. And so when he comes home the next day before anybody else gets back, he drops a couple of those little pieces of paper into his beer, you know, because that was all acid. He's not going to do it on his own. And then the cycle begins anew.
And then later on, his wife.
In 3 minutes, that's not bad. It fell apart at the end, but I had a little something going for me there for a minute.
I think his wife at some point goes to look for him. Maybe something wasn't done around the house and she's going to complain at it. And she opens up the door to the back, to the closet, and Dad's hanging by his tie.
Oh,
and that's,
no.
But hear me out.
Easier.
But then a song starts about decomposing Dad.
No, no. He's standing in a trash can like Frank. He's just trying to come down. He thinks he's been locked in the Winnebago for 3 days, but it turns out he's just standing there.
All right, Lindsay.
No.
Go ahead and make it better. Make it better.
Okay, mine is just more of a follow-up on the characters. The Count gets chased out of town because he's a dick.
And murdered.
And then Oblio grows up and becomes one of their local politicians and helps everybody, like, get along.
That makes more sense than what I watched. All right. Haley, anything you want to add to that?
I want the Count to run off and end up in the Pointless Forest. And then have to go through and meet all those crazy characters and see if he learns a big life lesson from that.
Actually, that would be the sequel. Yeah, the sequel would be maybe it's the Count and his son. And okay, you know what? All right, I'm going to do something for real this time. So the sequel is the Count and his son. They're in the Pointless Forest. The son changes. The father does not. And in the end, the son rejects his father and leaves him in the Pointless Forest alone and returns to society and befriends Oblio and comes full circle as not only is it saying it's wrong to push people out that are different, but that people can change. And then Ziggy Stardust plays. Imagine Dragons is on the soundtrack.
Oh, fuck you. We're trying to have a good time here. Come on.
All right. green light the sequel. Now, okay, now I'll leave it with one more question, then we'll get out of here. We're at our time. But if they did do the sequel, let's say it's the sequel I suggested. Who do you get to narrate it? Who's the narrator this time? Who do you want? We'll start with Hunter.
In 2024?
Yeah, in 2024. If they made a sequel now. Yeah.
David Tennant.
That's pretty good.
Oh, that would be a good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I want a British voice on it, and he's a guy who I don't think gets enough play for that kind of thing. He's better at that than he gets credit for, because he does so much actual. And I know I'm very much constantly a proponent of stop hiring actors to do voice acting jobs, but I think he gets right on the line.
Yeah, I'll take that. What about you, Lindsay? Who would you want?
Well, I mean, if we're going to go the British route, I'm going to go John Oliver.
That's a good one, too. That's a good pick, too.
I like that.
Yeah.
Hang on. Now I just want the Last Week Tonight version of this story, which happens in about 5 minutes, but it's John Oliver as the dad. That's the thing that I want now.
I think they should just keep the button on his shoe. Every, like, 10 years or something, re-release it on TV with a different narrator.
Yes, with a different narrator.
Different narrator every time.
Yes. I like it.
Until 2026, when Donald Trump is president again, of course, because he's going to be, and he's the one doing it, and he's like,
why is it 2026?
Oblio was a loser.
Oh, because we're going to blank out a year.
I'll be honest, I already did watching this film. Haley, what about you? Who would you want as the narrator? You can't pick
someone else. I like the David Tennant choice. Now I can't think of anyone else.
I like David Tennant too, but I think David Tennant only works because you can't have Gilbert Gottfried.
My second option would be Snoop Dogg, but only this version that I just dropped in the text only.
Oh, no.
Son of a bitch.
What did you send?
Snoop Dogg, but he has to be in the Count costume the entire time he does it.
All right, well, that's going to do it for us tonight. I was going to say go back and listen to last night's episode of Horse Time, but that was 2 days ago. And by the time you hear this...
And this isn't going to air for a little while.
That's correct.
We live-streamed Helldivers last night. That was a lot of fun.
No, we live-streamed Helldivers 2 weeks ago from the time...
Sure.
We should say, you know, we had a great episode of Extras and
Plays last night. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was definitely great.
We once again want to send out our condolences to the family of Tanner Calvert for what happened to him in the 2 weeks that since this has happened. Not that anything bad happened to him. He's just, you know, he's still alive.
Should probably do it for Kaz too, because I'm reasonably sure that Steven's
gonna kill him.
Kaz by the time Steven, that you hear this.
Steven is gonna murder him. Yeah. All right. That's gonna do it for us tonight. Since this is a future show, I cannot stress to you that I don't know what to tell you. Just go back and listen to previous episodes and stay tuned for more episodes.
Yep.
Well, I can't say this. This is Animation April, and Hunter, technically, what do we have on the docket for next week? Technically.
So we do actually have the full loadout for what's coming up.
Which, by the way,
Lindsay got them ahead of time. I mean, big time ahead of time.
This month, by the way, was not supposed to be Animation April. Shannon Young, who owns the network, who created Podzilla 1985 with his own bare hands, wanted to do April, APE-RIL.
Hang on, his own bare hands, yes, and my
but
job's
I am the queen, and your studio overrides you.
So we will eventually get around to April. That's probably 2025. That's our next year deal. But yeah, Lindsay laid it all out. So if we're doing it in the order that I have them here, then you'll hear this first on the first week of April is when you're hearing this now. The next week will be The Last Unicorn. The week after that then would be Pixar's Elemental. It's the most recent thing we have on there. And then, Shannon, I don't know if you know this. Lindsay let me pick one, kind of. She came to me and said, okay, Miyazaki. Yeah, she gave me some Miyazaki choices. There were three of them.
I was about to say, what the fuck? I didn't get a choice. Why don't I get to pick an animation film?
You got a choice today. You picked Alan Thicke.
Oh, fuck you. Fuck you.
Because the running joke has always been that I know so much about anime when in fact I know nothing about it. But I did know that Howl's Moving Castle is like one of the big, if not the biggest one from him. So she gave me an option of three. I said, let's do Howl's Moving Castle. I hear all these things about it. I want that one. So that's going to be the last one that we do the last week of April. So Hunter, Last Unicorn, Elemental, Howl's Moving Castle, they're coming up.
I am putting something in the group chat since we're talking about Miyazaki. That I want you to watch, and Haley, I think you should watch it too. I think everyone should watch this if you're a fan of Miyazaki. This is if Miyazaki films were like other anime, so please enjoy that. It's fantastic. And on that note, we're out of here. I want to thank Hunter, Lindsay, and especially Haley for coming on the show. It was good talking to you. It was good seeing you.
Well, thanks for having me on. I always love talking about weird animation. So
that's what we were assured. And you definitely didn't disappoint. We'll be back with all new episodes this week. Thank you, guys. Until then, the balcony is closed. Double H, take us out.
Oh, don't do it to me. I don't know anything about this. Haley, take us out.
I don't know. I don't know what to say.